When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to The Treatment Room. I'm your host, Tessa Zolli, and I'm happy to be here with you guys today. I have a little announcement I wanted to kick the show off with in the spirit of our conversation today, which is skincare brands and working with them. I am soon to have my own. It's finally here. And if you paid attention to my original announcement, that was maybe a year and a half ago. It's been a long time coming, and I couldn't have picked a worse time to start this kind of endeavor with COVID going on, with delays in shipping and ingredient scarcity and all these things. But the moment is finally here, and I'll probably have a panic attack when the box of products arrives. But that day is coming soon. So just, I know I've told you guys to stay tuned, but now we're actually getting closer and the products are in sight. So I cannot wait. I haven't really told anyone this either, but I am launching two products to start. I don't know if anyone has any guesses on what it's gonna be. It's very true to me and my philosophy and things I've talked about. So let's get the rumor swirling. No, but I'm launching with two products, and I decided to do that versus an entire line at once because I think people like the linear nature of launches. If you look at big brands like Apple, or even some skincare brands do this too, like Summer Fridays, they'll launch one product at a time, and that gives the consumer that headspace to kind of wrap their head around one thing at once and really get to know it and just take it in, versus dropping 12 products on you at once and then you're overwhelmed and nothing feels necessarily special. Whereas if you drop one thing at a time, it's way less overwhelming for the brand as well as the consumers. But had I launched 12 things at once, I just can't even imagine. I'm so glad I went this route and I almost didn't. So it's just really good things are happening this way. And just know there will be more products to come. But I think it's a cool way to keep people excited for what's to come and just allow yourself to keep your pulse on what people want. And yeah, launch things one at a time. I think it just makes way more sense. So that is happening soon. I don't have an exact date. That's one of the main questions, like, when is it happening? And something I've learned about this process is it's very hard to estimate a timeline, especially when you're a small business like myself. I'm not in control of everything going on in the manufacturing process. So a lot of things just kind of happen as they come, and I can do my best. But even like the photo shoots and the marketing, a lot of that is we're just waiting on the products to get here. And now we know they're being shipped out this month, but a lot is going to happen on the fly once I actually receive everything. So this is probably the thing I'm most proud of in my career world. Like, this is something that is completely my own, and I've had so many jobs in my life, you guys. I've really had a lot of jobs working for other people and pouring my heart out and working so hard for other people. So it's very surreal to have something with my own name on it and only have myself to thank. Outside of my creative director, it's really just been us, but I'm just so excited for that. So stay tuned, and thank you all in advance for your support and your excitement. Like, that is what matters. I mean, I can sit in my room excited all I want, but at the end of the day, it's going to be your guys' reactions and experiences with the products and your excitement for it that is going to fuel me and keep me going. So I just can't wait for that. So speaking of brands, I want to transition into today's episode topic, which is going to be about brand deals, sponsored content, content creation, the whole influencer space. And I know this is a little bit different from my regular content, but the reason I think it's so important to talk about is estheticians are the next class of professional influencers within the skincare and beauty space. It's already happening. We have so much credibility that makes us very attractive to brands. So it's happening now. Brands are reaching out to estheticians, especially estheticians who are creating content on a regular basis. And I will confidently say, I think we have more credibility than the average Joe or Gina because we know skin. We understand how it functions. We know what to look for. And we can speak to a product much better than your average person. So if a brand can get content and they can get it from somebody who's automatically credible, who an audience already trusts, that is advantageous. So I want estheticians to be savvy about sponsored content because it is such a new space. It's kind of like the Wild West. There is a lot of confusion. There is such a range of money that there is no concrete definition or scale or way of understanding how much to charge. It's just on such a sliding scale because every creator has a unique audience, a unique engagement rate, a unique skill set, a unique personality, a unique number of platforms that they put content on. So their reach is different. It's very difficult to gauge what the exact value should be for a post. And it's very tricky to navigate these contracts, you guys. I was sent an 18-page contract the other day by a big brand, one of my favorite brands I have always dreamed of working with, basically the number one brand I wanted to work with. And I got this contract and I was completely overwhelmed. I don't have a law background. I'm not experienced reading contracts. And I automatically felt overwhelmed and scared and vulnerable instead of excited. And I remember before I started influencing, I would look at other content creators and I would just think it was so cool when they got sponsored content. And it is cool. A lot of us create content with the idea that we could eventually make money from brand deals one day. So it's very, very exciting. And when you're just seeing the sponsored content, you just think, so cool. You don't think about any of the what goes on in the back end. So when you get a contract like that, it is a very sobering moment because you realize you're the only one fending for yourself unless you have a manager, which I don't have a manager right now. I'm just completely on my own out there. And unfortunately, a lot of brands know this. And they know you can't understand the contract. You don't know the meaning of everything. And if you are naive to some of the things in the contract, you can get yourself in a very bad position. Worst case scenario, you could be taken advantage of, or you could just not be paid for your worth. And I won't speak too much to, you know, judging the value of your content. There are other resources like Social Blue Book that I would recommend for that. But I want to talk more about what to look for so I can help anybody avoid that feeling of being scared and being nervous. one of the main things I want everyone to understand is that brands are not your friends. And I want to be friends with everyone. That's just my personality and my nature. And this is something I noticed when I first started working with brands. A lot of them have a very playful demeanor, and a lot of them are very nice people. They're just like you and me. But it's easy when you're messaging on social media or talking with a brand that you think is so great, or you've looked up to, or you already love, it's very easy to fall into that thinking of, oh, we're friends, and you know, I wanna make them happy, and I wanna do them favors, and I just wanna keep this friendly dynamic because it's so cool that this brand reached out to me. And yes, it's so cool. Like, pat yourself on the back. That is awesome. You got it going on if they reached out to you. That is awesome. But I will say, we need to remind ourselves, and I have to remind myself, because especially as you start working with brands, you do develop relationships on some level, or when you're doing collabs, you get to know certain people behind the brand, and it's very easy to want to be friends. And you have to remember that it is a business transaction, and you can be friendly, you can really like them, but it is important to keep things professional. And I also think that is important in terms of your audience. It's very important in working with brands that you understand it as a business partnership and not a friendship. And that will save you from feeling like, I should give them a good deal, I should offer more than I typically would, I should go out of my way. You just want to remember, it is business. And maintaining clear boundaries will allow you to put your foot down when you need to. And it's important to remember this. So when you do need to put your foot down, or something doesn't feel right, or the brand is asking for something you wouldn't normally do, you don't make exceptions just because you want to make them happy as you would make a friend happy. And I want to get more into some of the red flags that can come up and when to, in my opinion, walk away or push back with a brand. Again, recently I had an 18-page contract from my dream sponsorship, and it was really difficult, you guys, to walk away, which I did. And there was a decent amount of money on the table. Almost a grand, which is a good chunk of change for me. And I'm so honored this company reached out to me. I have always wanted to work with them. But at the end of the day, there were certain red flags in the contract. And had I not been so, so careful, had I not thought about the contract, slept on it, printed it out, gone through it with a highlighter and a fine tooth comb. And had I not been so careful, it could have ended not so great. And I am somebody who's pretty good at reading literature. I was an English major. I'm pretty good at breaking down sentences and just reading and evaluating things. And I understand another SD might not have the same background and might not be so careful. It's very easy to get giddy about a brand name, but I'm telling you guys, not all that glitters is gold. And it was extremely hard to walk away from $1,000. Like, I mean, that's a decent amount of money. You could buy yourself a nice handbag. You could pay a lot of your bills off with that money. But again, you have to remember, no amount of money is worth your brand or your reputation, because you have spent your entire career building that image and you will continue to do that. So this is why I say it's just so important to be really careful when you're signing contracts and working with brands. because a lot of brands have lawyers, litigation, and more power at the end of the day. So it's just very careful, because as shiny and fun as sponsored content seems, at the end of the day, it is serious when you are signing a contract or signing a deal with a brand. Okay, I'm rambling, but let's get into some red flags that happen when it comes to brand deals. The first thing that is important when it comes to brand deals is having an actual contract in place. Now, have I done brand deals where there was never really a contract, an official contract? I have. And did things work out? Yes, they did. I was actually always paid, and paid a lot of times even before the content went up, and it always worked out in my favor. I've worked with small businesses. I've worked with other SDs. I've worked with startups. So sometimes we have to realize even the brand is inexperienced with brand deals, because a lot of us are just figuring this out as we go, and it's a new space. But if I were to give anyone advice, it would be to have an official contract in place, because I have heard horror stories of brands ghosting creators or not paying for a long, long period of time. So it really is best to have an official contract where they lay out the terms of the contract. What are they asking of you? How many posts are they asking for? Where are those posts happening? What platform? Is it Instagram? Is it YouTube? How many posts are they asking? What is the agreed upon commission or rate that you are charging? And when is the deadline for the project? So having that information in a clear contract where both parties sign, that's a binding agreement. If it's, you know, Instagram DMs, hard to say, that kind of is in writing, but just to make sure everything is clear and everyone understands their responsibility, I would recommend having an official contract laid out between the two of you. I see so many horror stories on TikTok and social media from small brands saying that the creator never posted, or from creators saying the brand never paid me. And as tragic as that stuff is, everybody needs to have a signed contract. And sometimes those things still happen when a contract is in place, but at the very least, you want that to protect yourself. And if you're a small business or a brand, before working with any other influencer, you should have a signed contract in place. And I think that just shows that you're a business person, you are smart, and you're looking out for yourself. And I think anyone would respect that. So always have a contract in place, number one. That is one example where it's not necessarily a red flag if the brand doesn't offer a contract, but I would have one anyway, and it could be a red flag if they didn't. Okay, next red flag would be something I dealt with recently, and this is one of the reasons I walked away from this dream sponsorship. Okay, this is a requirement for the creator to reach a certain number of views on the content. So, for example, in the contract that I was reading, this brand was requiring me to hit a certain number of views for the agreed upon posts. In the contract, it said if I did not reach the expected amount of views, I would owe the brand more content until I reached those required views. And again, it sounds fishy, but when you're looking at an 18-page contract, this just goes to show you have to question everything. You have to think about the implications for everything. And for me, although the number of views that were required were reasonable, they were what I on average hit, you have to think about, what if YouTube is acting up that day? What if the Instagram algorithm is off? I know with TikTok, it is so hard to guarantee a certain level of reach, because I've had videos go viral and I've had videos get stuck at like one or 200. It's really bizarre, but that's just the way the internet works. And there were other terms in this contract that I was not comfortable with, but had this been the only one, I still would have walked away, because I have realized for myself, I'm never going to do contracts that require a certain number of views. And I think brands need to understand you can't safeguard yourself like that, because it's unfair to the creator. You are paying them for a certain number of posts. So saying you're requiring views automatically communicates distrust, in that you are trying to set yourself up for a win-win. So you're getting the first original piece of content, and if it doesn't perform for some reason, you're asking the creator to produce you more content. And I just think, that's ethically wrong. I don't think that's fair, because you are paying for the creator's time, their resources, and a lot of effort goes into creating content. So I just think that is, I don't think it's right, and I don't support those kinds of deals. I think it's just kind of shady on the brand's behalf. And the last thing you want going into content creation is the creator feeling distrust, because that just completely interrupts the creative process, which sounds cheesy, but when I'm heading into creating content for a brand or a sponsored post, I'm already a little nervous. I already know I have to uphold certain terms and conditions. I have to meet certain requirements. I have to make certain things known about the content. So it's already not my everyday process. If I have the added pressure that I have to reach a certain level of views, how do you think that's going to perform? Typically, for me, that doesn't work well. As soon as I'm overthinking the content, I'm worried about it and attaching that nervous energy to it, it just doesn't perform well. It feels forced. So I think even for the brand, that is just the one thing you can do to set yourself up for inauthentic content, or content that just feels forced and strained. And some people can perform under those conditions, but I myself don't think it's fair. So I will not be agreeing to those kind of contracts. The third red flag for me is any brand that requires exclusivity or some sort of non-compete term. Non-competes are something that basically forbids an employee or a creator, it still applies, from working with a competing brand. So if I were to sign a non-compete or an exclusivity agreement with a skincare brand, that might imply I cannot work with any other skincare brands for a certain length of time, or, you know, indefinitely. So that's something we really want to think about, especially as estheticians, because our lives are recommending skincare and brands. This was actually another term within this contract, and for me, it made absolutely no sense. And this brand actually tried to convince me that I would look bad recommending other brands. I'm an esthetician. This is my job to recommend. I'm an esthetician. It is my job to make recommendations for skincare. So this was just completely bonkers to me. And it's something you really want to think about. In California, non-competes are technically illegal, but a lot of companies and brands still trying to enforce them. And I just think it is wrong. And again, just putting a fear-based mindset into the creator. And that's something a lot of brands don't have a problem with, and that's how they operate. And it's interesting. I don't think many brands face the level of pushback that I was offering reading this contract. I could tell they were kind of getting annoyed with my questions. And to be fair, we did email back and forth for a long time, but you have to do what you have to do. And these are things we need to be really, really careful about. So exclusivity terms, those are a deal breaker for me. I don't like the idea of a brand trying to limit my income or limit who I work with. And you have to be really careful when it comes to the length of time that these brands are enforcing. Sometimes it can be forever. Sometimes it could be something like 30 days or even 1 or 2 days. And those situations, I think, are more easy to work with. But just be careful around any time type of exclusivity condition. Okay, the next red flag, also something that was in this contract, just a whole 18-page contract of red flags, basically. So my next one is any brand that asks a creator to claim the product is superior to their competitor. I just think this feels icky, and I never personally want to be the person who's trash talking another brand or saying something is better. I don't know. I mean, it really can happen if a client is asking you, how did the clinical trials compare between these two brands? That's one thing, and you're speaking from evidence, but when a brand has to ask you to knock somebody else to make their product look good, to me, it feels like maybe the product really isn't superior, because if it was, they wouldn't have to try so hard. And I think it's just kind of getting into the territory of put downs and negativity, which you don't want to attach yourself to that for the sake of a brand deal. I mean, there's just no reason. And to me, I think it just speaks loudly about the brand's insecurity, and it almost comes across a little bit desperate. And you know what? That's their beef. They can fight that, but they don't need to bring you into that conversation. So that was something I put my foot down and said no to, and the brand actually understood and they didn't push that one too hard. Next red flag for me is when a brand asks a content creator to act out kind of like a script. And this is another one that I think you can work with. And I think brands tend to be flexible if you say, hey, I really want to create something authentic for you and something that just reflects like my natural content. That doesn't appear too much like an ad, because I think, you know, audiences are so savvy these days. And if something feels like an ad, they're going to scroll past it. They just want to dodge it. We feel marketed to so much that sometimes we can't handle another ad. So I think brands can be more receptive to that. And sometimes that happens with newer brands or startups who just want to get the correct info about their product out, and they don't understand it's coming off like an ad unless you lay out your boundaries and what you think will work better. And this brings up another point. Don't be afraid to communicate. And if you don't like something within the term, this goes back to why you want to keep it professional. It's not a friendship. Make sure you are communicating when something feels icky. You don't have to say that, but explain how you would prefer the term to be or what you would rather do. And I think kind of a nice way of going about this, rather than just coming across like an entitled influencer, is just suggesting an alternative. A lot of times, again, these people sending the contracts, they're not themselves in this space, and they just may not understand. Like, some small brands are reaching out to influencers as the owner. and they're business owners. They're not influencers themselves. So a lot of times they are open to your ideas, especially if you do this and you do it well. They're totally open to seeing how you could execute the vision better. But just don't be afraid and don't be shy and don't feel meek and like you just have to be this people pleaser, because you have your own boundaries. And at the end of the day, you want to create content that is authentic, and you know your audience best. You know what will read phony. And me personally, I'm not an actress. I don't want to sit there and read out a script. So if there is a smoother way to incorporate what the brand wants to communicate, I would rather do that versus creating an ad myself. This gets into another area of signing contracts, which is a brand asking you to create an ad-like piece of content and asking you to post it on your end. And then, this is really sneaky, but asking if they can repost your content and use it as an ad. So I've been on two sides of the coin. This happens a lot. This is, I'd say, the number one thing to look out for. Something you definitely want to understand is the distribution rights of the content. And this goes back to why you want a contract in place that clearly lays out the amount of posts that this transaction includes. The brand cannot assume that they have the right to your content and that they can repost it or use it as an ad. And here's why, as a creator, that this is probably one of the biggest red flags. You should never allow a brand the rights to distribution unless they are compensating you for it, and unless you understand the term of the contract. There is something called in perpetuity. This was also in the 18-page contract, just so many red flags. But in perpetuity is a term that basically means forever. So it basically means a brand can use your content forever for whatever means they want. Now, there's something called internal use, which I don't really have a problem with, which is just, you know, for the brand's own purpose, for their meetings, for their internal communication, they might be sending your content around. That's fine. What I have an issue with is the term in perpetuity when it is used for consumer-facing content. So something like a repost on social media or as an ad that this company chooses to run on their page. It's so important that the content that goes on your page and the content that the brand is asking for as an ad, these need to be distinguished as two separate ads, and you are entitled to compensation for both separately. So I have had a brand kind of just, you know, ask me to do this piece of content, and it was kind of just sneaky the way, I don't even know if it was intentional, but they asked, could you film it a certain way so that we can use it for our purposes for advertising? Had they not said that, maybe I wouldn't have known what they were going to do with the content. And this was an example where there was no contract in place. So this is where I had to ask for a contract and I had to assert myself. And even though it's uncomfortable because I like this brand, I like the people who work there, they're super nice, you have to remember, they're looking out for themselves. They might like you as a person too, but at the end of the day, they have a job to do, and that is secure content for the least amount of money possible. So at this point, this is where I put my foot down and I said, you know what? I can create content on my page, but I'm not comfortable reading an ad like script, because I didn't say this, but I know my feeling is that I'm not an actress and this isn't authentic to me. and I'm not okay with you using the content on your page for advertising purposes. I'm so sorry. I'm not able to do that. I'm only able to create content that goes on my page and assign a certain rate to it. Or I can create content for you, but that's going to be, it's going to cost you. That's going to be a separate charge. And then they asked, could we just pay you $50 for the distribution rights for the ad? I said, I'm so sorry. I said, I'm going to have to pass on that. I cannot give you the rights to distribution for an ad. Okay, I want you guys to think about this. I think we undervalue our content a lot because we think, oh, I just made this on my iPhone. It was fun. You know, the brand sent me products, so it wasn't that hard. There is a lot of value in content creation because brands understand viewers prefer seeing sponsored content that is natural and authentic to the creator that they follow versus a commercial, versus an advertisement, which is why brands are leaning into content creation, which is why there's a lot of money to be made and there's a lot of opportunity for creators. But it's probably cheaper to pay an influencer for their content than hire an actress or a model, reserve a production studio, pay everyone their day rate, pay for liability insurance, and have to create a whole commercial. That gets expensive. So whatever it would cost to pay you as a creator to produce the content is always going to be less than it would take to create a whole ad or a commercial. So if a brand is asking you for distribution rights to your content to use for their purposes, such as an ad, you have to think of how much money they're saving themselves and how much they're taking advantage of you for trying to use that content for free or pay you some sort of small fee. The next thing I want to circle back to is the in perpetuity. So this is a term that if I ever see this in a contract when it comes to a brand using my content is an automatic, non-negotiable, we are not doing this. When you say in perpetuity, again, it means the brand can use your image and likeness for as long as they want. You have to think of the worst case scenario here. And initially I'm thinking, I love this brand. What's the problem with them promoting my face? They can have it. Like, they can use my content. Doesn't that just make me look more credible because they're such a great brand? Not necessarily. You have to think, if there was a scandal at this company, if word came out that they used some extremely toxic ingredient or something happened where their brand image shifted, you have to understand they could be running your ads with your face on it for extended periods of time. They could be running this ad every day and never paying you. You have to think about these things and be really careful. So in perpetuity is something I stay far, far away from. And if there's going to be some agreement where the brand uses my content or I agree to that, they're going to have to make sure they pay me separately. I would charge more for an ad because, again, we know all of the resources that go into creating ads, and I would make sure there is a finite term around how long they can use the ad. If they want to use it for 2 weeks, a month, a couple days, that might be fine based on your comfort level. But again, you have to imagine the worst case scenario. So usually a tighter term is better. And sometimes brands will agree to that. And sometimes it doesn't end up being that bad for the creator. If they can't talk about other brands for a couple days, that might be okay. But you also have to factor in income you could be missing out if you are agreeing to an exclusivity agreement which is why I'm not a fan of them. And I don't think any company has the right to limit what you talk about and your income. So those are not necessarily ideal, but there can be scenarios where it could be okay. This episode is brought to you by Onoxa. So some of you might know, I have been on quite the journey for the past, 2 years now, creating a skincare line, and I have learned a lot through this experience. It has been heartbreaking at times. It's been frustrating. I have cried. I have spent a lot of money, time, and energy that could have been spent on my business. So if I were to pass on anything to you, if you are considering making your own products, it would be that choosing the manufacturer is really everything. It can make or break the entire experience. Private labeling is so much easier and more affordable with Onoxa versus partnering with a contract manufacturer for product development, which, let me tell you, it is a huge investment. Everything is done online with Onoxa, and I was kicking myself because I went through their process. I chose my products to sample and I created my own skincare labels. The whole process took maybe 20 minutes once I had my design. It was incredibly easy. I do recommend private labeling because it's a prime opportunity to increase your business retail revenue, which for us Estes is typically half of our business. Half is services and half is retail. The reason I recommend private labeling is because you can set your own profit margins. So you can still retail other brands you love, but it's a way to position your name and your branding along with well-established brands to give credibility to your business and increase your revenue because there's no middleman. You get to set the prices. And I already know what you guys are wondering. Yes, they do offer backbar product sizes for their hair and spa formulas. So it's a really easy upsell to offer your client the same retail size of a backbar product you used on them during their services. Professionals choose and love Onoxa products because they're used by estheticians and dermatologists. Their formulas are USA made using high-end ingredients, and all of their skincare and hair care is vegan and cruelty-free. The best part is the branding is completely customizable, so you can make sure your products fit your business and reflect your aesthetic. For more information, check out onoxa.com and the information in the show notes below. Now, let's get back to the treatment room. This episode is sponsored by Pomp. Pomp is a platform that helps licensed estheticians grow our businesses and make extra income. For me, this has been game-changing for my virtual business because it's a platform that allows me to connect with my clients digitally and make recommendations to them. I don't have to handle the shipping. All I do is make a recommendation and make commission on everything they purchase. Pomp also works with a medical director, which is incredible because that allows you to have access to brands like It's Clinical, Revision Skincare, and many more without paying for your own medical director. You don't have to hold any inventory. Pomp ships the products directly to your client, and my clients are always so impressed with Pomp because the packaging is personalized. They always include a cute little note, and the shipping is super fast and always free. For more information, you can check out the link in the podcast show notes for more details to get started with Pomp. The last red flag comes down to payment. And again, this is a little bit of a gray area because if you've never done sponsored brand deals and say you were approached with a gifting opportunity, it might be something worth taking. I definitely started out accepting gifting as a form of payment, and it was helpful for me as a creator because I'd never done sponsored content, so it allowed me to get my feet wet and just understand what the process and exchange was like. But I would say, even with gifting, make sure it is a brand that you're proud to support and that you would spend your own money on and that you would recommend to a friend. So I don't think gifting is necessarily a red flag when you're in the early stages of becoming a content creator and influencer. I think it can benefit you and just and give you some practice as far as what the brand expects. Now, once you've started accepting paid brand deals, that's when you might want to really rethink gifting, because number one, we have to remember these brands can afford to pay influencers. They can definitely afford it, unless they're you're you know, super small local business. That might be one scenario, but most of these brands can afford to pay you. They just don't want to. And if they can find an influencer who will do it for free, hey, that's really cheap content for them to create. And again, remember the value you are providing this brand. It might just seem like a little video you made on your iPhone to you, but to a brand, it is highly valuable to have an individual, especially a professional, speaking to their product. So I no longer accept gifting as a form of payment, and I would challenge other creators to really think twice about accepting gifting, because the thing is, it does lower the standard of payment for everyone. It makes it harder to get paid as a creator, and it lessens the amount you can get paid in the future, because if the industry standard is, you know, creating content just for product, brands will never want to pay anyone. So that's something to think about. And again, take that with a grain of salt. If you've never done paid sponsorships before, it could be a way to get your feet wet. But the most important thing is making sure you are in line with the brand and not accepting gifting as a form of payment for too long. I know it's exciting when you're getting sent free product in the beginning, but there comes a limit to it. You can only have so much skincare in your house. So there's definitely a point where you want to cut it off. And it's okay, again, to say, I actually only accept money as a form of payment. Shocker. That's something you should not feel shy about saying. But unfortunately, sometimes we have to, and you shouldn't feel bad about that for a second, because we all have to pay our bills, and we pay with money. We don't pay our bills with products. So as nice as their product is, they should pay you if they want content from you. End of story. Again, unless you've really never done it before, and it could be like your first couple opportunities learning to create content. And I'd say in that case, it's more about showing you what the process is like than receiving the gifting. And it gets easier and easier, by the way, guys, to put your foot down. It's hard at first, especially if something is your dream company or your dream brand, but definitely gets easier with time. So know your worth. And I mean that on a real, like, know your value type of level. Like, if you've never worked with brands before, you know, gifting could be a good opportunity. But if you've done this, there's no reason that you should have to accept that. And whatever you're asking for is probably a lot less than you're worth. Okay, I wanted to wrap this up by answering some of your questions. I posted a little question box on Instagram. By the way, if you're not following there, my handle is myestytessa, MyEstyTessa. Okay, how did you get brands to reach out to you and collab? Do you reach out to them? I've reached out to brands unsuccessfully, and later they have come to me asking if I wanted to work with them. But I've never really done a deal just based on reaching out to a company I want to work with. But I will say this, the more specific you are about your niche and the types of products you promote, the more brands will come to you. So for me, from the jump, I've always been
so passionate and loyal to professional skincare, mineral makeups, high quality devices that are FDA cleared. So my niche is very defined within the aesthetic space. These are brands that, you know, these are brands that professionals would use and recommend. So the more clear I am about the products that I like and the quality that I expect out of products, I think that has just allowed brands to find me. Now, here's another strategy. Posting regularly, if there are brands you really love and you want to work with, that's a great way to catch their eye. So using their hashtags or just tagging them in natural content. I have caught brands' attention that way. So Scene Hair Care, for example, I made multiple videos talking about acne safe hair care and why it's so important. That allowed Scene to see my content, see that I was already recommending their products. So it would be a natural fit to offer me an affiliate program or some sort of collab. Because I was already passionate about the brand and already educating about the brand. So that's a really great way to get brands' attention. And I don't have anything against seeking out brands you want to work with. I think if you want to get into the content creation space, absolutely do that. Make sure you create a media kit. There are examples of media kits on Canva, even the free version, although I think the pro version is very much worth it. But I created my media kit on Canva and I like to always have that ready to go. And I update it every couple months with my stats. And that includes the platforms that I create content on. It includes stats on my podcast, on my YouTube channel, on my Instagram, on my TikTok. So that's all in one place. And if a brand reaches out, I can send them that and it speaks to my audience and my value and my reach. So I think that's a really good thing to have if you are wanting to get into the creator space and wanting to create sponsored content. Start with creating a media deck. And that way, when you reach out to brands, you can attach that. And that just gives them kind of a snapshot into you and what you offer. And it's easier for them to look at your social media that way and, you know, see all that you have to offer, because they may not stumble across your TikTok. They may just assume you have Instagram. So definitely go for it. If this is something you want to do, reach out to brands. You have nothing to lose. So I definitely would encourage that, although I've never really relied on that. And here's the thing. A lot of people want to know, when is the right time to start creating sponsored content? A lot of it has to do with the value and the content you're already creating. So ask yourself a few things. Ask yourself, am I already regularly creating consistent content at scale? If you're posting to your Instagram page once a week and you're only posting photos that benefit your business. So say, for example, I'm only posting client before and afters. I do that once a week. I wouldn't consider that necessarily as an influencer or somebody who should be, not that they shouldn't be, but I wouldn't consider that a creator. I would just more consider that a business page where you are showcasing your work. I think a creator is somebody who is creating content partially for you, but also for an audience, for other people. So you are bringing some value to other people beyond just showing, you know, your before and afters, what you can do in your business. So that's an example of, you know, a regular business post versus a video I make about pore clogging ingredients or acne safe hair care or tips for acne prone skin types. That is creating content that is for an audience and for other people. And I think you should take your time creating that type of content. And there's definitely a point where you deserve to be paid if brands are reaching out, but I wouldn't put too much pressure. Again, I think the longer you can spend creating value and content for free, I think that really comes back to you in the long run. And sometimes I'll have my mentors asking me, like, so what's your goal with your social media? What's the goal here with your podcast? And my goal is still the same thing it was from day one. Like, my heart is on fire for skincare. I love it. I'm obsessed with it. I need somebody to talk to about it. I want to help people. I want to educate. I want to talk to other Estes who are in the shoes I was once in. I want to help alleviate any doubt and build your confidence. I haven't thought about my business as I want to, reach X amount of dollars in sponsored posts. Maybe soon to come, but I think the longer I can focus on you guys and just bringing you value, I know brands are going to come to me. Things will happen. Things will work out in my favor. But I would really prioritize giving other people value and just having fun with it before you start to worry about sponsored content. And I really do think when you are ready, brands will start to come to you, even as a micro influencer. I think brands can recognize good engagement. And when somebody is just creating good, valuable content, maybe it inspires, maybe it, you know, is aspirational, maybe it's just very calming, maybe it's educational, maybe it's funny, maybe it's super aesthetic, some kind of value like that is just so attractive to brands. And trust me, they will start to find you. So I think it's okay to wait for brands to come to you as long as you're focusing on your niche and creating content that you want to create and knowing who your audience is, knowing who you're serving, and always coming back to them above anything else. And I think the sponsorships will definitely follow. What makes you want to keep partnering with a brand, especially if it's new? Really good question. I like to look for brands that solve a problem that I'm not already treating. So an example would be Lash Food. They are one of my affiliate partners, which we'll talk about next. But I am very happy to work with Lash Food because I already have a lot of skincare solutions. The number of outside brands that I'm willing to work with is very small, and that's something that's tricky for us as Estes, because a lot of beauty brands or a lot of skincare brands automatically want to come to you because you are the authority and they want to work with you. But you have to remember, you have your own backstop, you have your own clients, you have your own products. So I don't like to introduce too many competing brands, but I like to look for brands that meet a need of my clients or my audience that I'm not already solving, something that I'm not in competition with. So Lash Food was a beautiful partner for me because my clients ask all the time about lash and brow serums. And I saw a big problem in the space where most lash and brow serums and a lot that even professionals were recommending contain something called prostaglandin analogs that are hormone mimicking ingredients. And for the longest time, I didn't have a product to recommend to my clients that wasn't damaging, irritating, or had the potential to damage and irritate. And as a skincare therapist, we kind of take on an oath that we will do no harm to our clients. So to me, it doesn't make sense to recommend a product that could be damaging or hurting somebody, especially on their skin or on their delicate eye area. And then when I found Lash Food, they were inorganic, certified organic, hormone-free, plant-based lash and brow serum. So it was like perfect. They're naturally solving a solution for me. Other brands would be like Oxygenetics or bare minerals, mineral makeups that do not clog the skin are actually beneficial to the skin. And these are great partnerships for me because my clients are always looking for makeup that's not going to undo the work we're doing in the treatment room. I don't sell any makeup brand currently, so those are ideal partners for me that aren't competing with the lines that I retail myself, but still hold true to my expectations and results I want for my clients. Or a device brand might be something else that I don't directly sell, but would be very advantageous to my clients. So I'm always keeping the needs of my audience in mind. Or Sane Hair Care, for example, an acne safe shampoo and conditioner. I don't retail those myself, but my clients are curious about acne safe hair care. And I obviously don't want them using hair care that is going to cause problems. So these are kind of products that solve various problems and again meet the need of my audience. Most important thing. So what makes me want to keep partnering with these brands? I do think the relationship is very important. Again, I try not to get into friends territory, although that's very easy for me because I'm a friendly, excited person and I like to make friends. But having a relationship, I feel like that is friendly, but above all, respectful of me as the creator is really important. So I've had brands, you know, come to me with ideas for a sponsorship, and maybe I don't necessarily agree with the terms. If they're willing to listen to me when I say that doesn't feel true to me, or that's a term I'm not comfortable with, the brand's flexibility and willingness to compensate me for what I ask is very important. If we're getting into negotiations and the brand is constantly undercutting me, or not willing to meet me somewhere reasonable or in the middle or pay me at all, that is just something I won't continue the relationship with because they don't see my worth. They don't see my value. So it depends on the relationship. Respect is super important. Flexibility is important. A two-way willingness to accommodate needs, and those are different from wants, but accommodate the needs of the business and the need of the creator and just have a nice rapport. It's important that they get my content, they get my vision, they respect me as an individual. And it's really important. I think the most important thing for me is not feeling like they're trying to manipulate me or manipulate my content to suit, you know, an ad like piece of content, because again, they could just hire an actress. So if a brand sees me for me and they respect my stamp of approval, they respect the kind of content I create, and they respect what I do in my business, those are the ideal partners who see my worth, see my value, can be flexible when needed. They're friendly, they're responsive. I have had partners where I don't hear back from them for 2 to 3 weeks on things. And that just doesn't make me want to keep putting projects in motion because I don't know, you know, when I'm going to get confirmation of payment. I don't know when we're checking off certain boxes. So that can make the process more difficult. So the last question I want to answer is about affiliate marketing. Affiliate marketing can be tricky and it can really depend on the deal and it can depend on the product. I think the most important things are your self-awareness of your audience and your understanding of what your audience wants and needs. So for me, for example, affiliate programs I have accepted are, again, things like Lash Food, Scene Hair Care, CarePods Humidifier. These are all products that I don't create myself. I don't work with in the same way that I work with Glymed and Is Clinical, whereas I don't consider those like affiliate partners. I consider those brands that I retail. when it comes to choosing outside affiliates, you don't want to take on 100 affiliates and have a million codes. I think you can get away with having a decent amount, but I think your audience might get tired of too many nonstop codes. And it really depends on, again, if the product is something they would willingly use or buy or that they're looking for. So I know that acne safe makeup, lash serums that don't contain hormones and that are not harmful, an acne safe hair care line, a humidifier, these are all natural questions that come into the conversation as an esthetician. My clients are always asking about makeup or a humidifier or, you know, what shampoo they can use so they're not going to irritate their skin. So that's how I choose affiliate partners. I've had brands like a coffee brand or a energy bar come to me wanting to do an affiliate deal. And those are deals I'd probably pass on because they're not paying me upfront. The commission is going to depend on what I retail. So I don't want to be slinging energy bars. I don't want to bombard you guys with messages about energy bars. Just know I'm never going to speak on something unless I would literally recommend it to my clients, because I know my clients see my content. They see my recommendations. I don't want them using a makeup that's going to ruin all of our hard work. It just would not be worth it. So that's the thing about my Instagram. I know estheticians see it. I know clients see it. I know other consumers see it. So I'm very particular about the recommendations I make, because you guys take those recommendations to heart. And it also takes a lot of time to create content. I have multiple businesses. I don't have time to just be creating content for affiliate deals, or for, you know, for something that's not likely to be something my audience really, really needs and wants. So I kind of have to factor in how much time it's going to take to create the content and is it worth it? If I'm getting 20% from a humidifier sale that my clients already would want to buy, that looks beautiful, performs better than anything on the market, and I'm getting 20% of a $150 deal, that's more appealing to me than getting 15% from you guys buying an energy bar that's $3. That doesn't make sense profit margin wise. I don't have the scale to really make a lot of money from, you know, making pennies from an energy bar. It's I have to think about what's actually like fair for my time and going to be worth my while. If I was a fitness influencer, if I was a fitness influencer with 50,000 followers, it would make a lot of sense for me to do a energy bar partnership because I could post a swipe up and you guys are already probably asking that fitness influencer, what kind of energy bar do you like? What kind of snacks do you eat? So it would make sense for that influencer. It just depends on the creator, on the audience, and about the numbers and, you know, what is realistically going to be worth your time. So again, that's different for everyone. Pay attention, if you're thinking about affiliate programs, pay attention to the questions your clients are already asking you or the questions you're already getting in your DMs. I was already getting asked, what makeup do you recommend? You know, what hair care should I use if I'm acne prone? So when these brands reached out for partnerships, it either just clicked or I was already making content for them. So it was already a natural fit. If you have to pause and think, would this make sense for me? It probably doesn't. Like energy bar, tempting because I'm into fitness, I'm into wellness, but is my audience? Not necessarily. So that's something where I was kind of pausing and thinking, does it make sense for me to promote an energy bar, a caffeine energy bar? Not necessarily. you know, I'm not trying to get anyone to, there's no reason to have you guys eating more caffeine. So I think about these things so, so carefully. And that way I'm not taking on jobs that take my attention away from other things. That's something that's also very key for estheticians. You are already a business owner or working for somebody else, and your main priority needs to be the client. That's different from, you know, your consumer or just, you know, your classic influencer who wants to make influencing their job and whose day, you know, is available to create content. In that case, it might make sense to take on, you know, a bunch of deals, and that way you're just constantly creating content, you're constantly creating new streams of income. But if you are an esthetician, your extra energy and extra time is probably pretty limited, so you want to be very careful about what you take on, because that is time you are taking away from your business. So although 15% commission from a vitamin company might sound kind of nice to add to your paycheck, you have to think about what's the time I'm taking out of my day away from my clients to make content about a vitamin. So you just have to decide if it's worth it for you. And again, if you're wondering if it resonates with your brands, the answer might be no. If you're hesitating, if you're not sure, if it feels forced, if you can't think of a natural way to promote the product, or you're trying to think of a content idea and it just seems awkward and forced and like something you wouldn't normally do, probably not worth your time. And typically affiliate deals, we just have to know this, they're typically not going to make a ton of money. Unless maybe you post a video about why that product is so unique and maybe it goes viral. Happened with my lash food video. And just, I had no idea this was going to happen, but that video really picked up. I think it has 100,000 views. And I happened to have the affiliate code literally in the video. So that piece of content made me a decent chunk of change. So it was definitely worth it. But had it not been true to my values, it just wouldn't have been worthwhile, because again, affiliate deals typically don't pay much. It's like pennies on the dollar, but I think we're drawn to them because we see huge influencers doing them. So it seems like something that would be smart to do. And it's kind of cool when a brand reaches out and, you know, offers you an affiliate deal. But you have to remember, again, those huge influencers have a scale where it can really be worth it for them. If they're posting a swipe up to 50,000 people, it's that can make the money, versus somebody with under 10,000 followers, they just, those kind of deals may kind of add up to nothing. All right, guys, those are my tips for sponsored content and brand deals. If you think of a follow-up question to this episode, you can shoot me a message on Instagram or leave me a comment, and that will help me with creating future content. I'm not sure if influencing is something you want to hear more about, especially for estheticians, but if so, let me know, and I'm happy to do more episodes like this one. Thank you guys so, so much for listening. I love you so much, and I will talk to you in the next episode.